Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Okay. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles, and this is a show where we deal with mental health issues from a more holistic perspective, which means body, mind, and spirit, and where we take the approach that we all know that the truth will set you free, but the question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? And it's an important aspect of all of our lives, being able to deal with our issues honestly, to get the help that we need sometimes in understanding or even identifying what the issues are that we're stuck on, why we're not living in joy, why things aren't going smoother for us, and to be able to take the step of saying, I don't have the answers and I need some help in doing this. If you're listening to this show and if nothing else comes out of it, that it motivates you to seek some help in your own community, with a therapist, with a coach, with a support group, whatever, then we're serving our purpose here, because basically all of us can look at our lives and see that there's something that isn't quite working, and some new skills that we want to develop, and a different sense of empowerment and joy. And that's what the show's about. Now, this is a live call-in show, and if you are so inclined to participate in the show this evening, either by asking a question or adding to the comment once I tell you what our topic is, if you're in the Phoenix area, the local phone number is 480 area code 874-1311, 480-874-1311. If you're listening via the Internet and you're outside the Phoenix area, there's a toll-free number, and that's 1-888-437-7660. That's 888-437-7660. I've been away the last couple of weeks, so if you listened to the show, you heard some reruns. In fact, last week, the show that I had them rerun was the one I did a couple of weeks ago on women with HIV and AIDS. And I know it was a very powerful show, and I've gotten some comments from a number of people via the Internet. And tonight, hopefully, I'm going to be challenging some of you even more. Tonight's topic is homophobia in the workplace and schools. Homophobia in the workplace and schools. One of the reasons I chose this topic tonight is because there's just so much more going on in the news today about the changes in legal status of gays, lesbians, bisexual, and transgender in terms of relationships, in terms of domestic partners, in terms of the sodomy ruling by the Supreme Court that, you know, what people do in their bedrooms now, as long as it's between consulting adults, is really nobody else's business but those consulting adults. And yet, what this is bringing up is quite a bit more controversy and discussion and debating about homosexuality, bisexuality, transgender, lesbian issues, in what people are seeing as a sense of threat to family and a sense of threat to people's personal comfort zones. And I think that's the best way to express it, personal comfort zones. And this is playing out more and more in the workplace, in schools. If you listened to the show a couple of months ago, you know I had a middle school guidance counselor, Mary McGonigal Martin, who had a 13-year-old girl come out to her at school, and God bless her, what she did was really to seek a support network for that 13-year-old and her family to help this transition, this coming out process, which the girl was totally committed to, be easier, gentler, more supportive, and to give her the self-esteem support that is so important in any life. But now we have something like, you know, there are a lot of people who would listen to that and say, you know, she's encouraging, you know, the gay agenda, whatever that is. And the issue of homophobia becomes more and more relevant and prevalent to discuss. So let's define homophobia. First, phobia. Phobia is an irrational fear. Could be about an irrational fear of elevators or about flying, about going out of the house. But homophobia is, as whatever phobia is, an irrational fear of homosexuality, homosexuals, lesbians, gay people in general. And it's usually based on stereotypes. It's usually based on a lot of falsehoods and misconceptions. And that's usually what prejudice and bias is usually based on, stereotypes, misconceptions, and family and cultural and religious teachings that keep one's judgments firm about other people. And yet, in spite of what we're seeing in the media, in terms of television programs, they have so many more gay and lesbian bisexual characters on it. In spite of what we're hearing in the news, in spite of a sense of acceptance that you're seeing in a lot of places, in political circles as well as entertainment circles, religious circles, with the Episcopal Church recently elevating a bishop who is openly gay and the conflict that that's been causing. It's out there. We're seeing more of it, and yet, you know, we would think that there'd be a greater sense of acceptance and that gay people themselves would have an easier time coming out of the closet. While I believe in many ways that may be true, it may be easier than it used to be. On a personal one-on-one level, gays and lesbians still are having a rough time coming out. There's more support for them in that process, but it's still, for many people, as difficult as it was for me when I came out of the closet in college, and yet the struggle that I went through from the time I was a child through adolescence, and even after I came out, was very difficult, in spite of the support that may have been out there. Because internalized homophobia that we experience, you know, within ourselves, can be just as damaging and just as restricting. So tonight we're going to be talking about how these things play out in the workplace and in schools. And my guest tonight is a marriage and family therapist named Leslie Tuckman, who also resides in the Los Angeles area. And Leslie, to be honest with you, I only spoke with her the first time today, and yet when I spoke with her, I said, this is the person to do the show tonight. So, Leslie, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you.
And like we said, you know, God works in mysterious ways. Since I don't know you all that well, rather than giving more of an introduction, I'd like to kind of drop that in your lap in terms of who you are professionally and personally.
Sure.
Then we're going to get into tonight's topic.
I am a lesbian, and I've been in the lesbian community here in Los Angeles for about 25 years. Professionally, I was working in the public schools for over 30 years, where I was a very, very closeted lesbian. I worked as a teacher and then as a counselor and then as a school psychologist. I dealt with quite a few young adults who were dealing with gay and lesbian issues. And while I was able to help them and their families at times connect with resources, I was certainly not at all able to speak about myself.
What would have happened if you did?
I had a lot of feeling of shame, I think, in those years myself. This was going back as far as the early 70s. I wasn't even out really to myself.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, it was a gradual process that took really probably 25 years. I don't know what would have happened. I don't know that I would have lost my job, but that was the fear that I carried.
Mm-hmm.
That my work would be at stake.
Okay, we're going to take a short break here, Leslie, and when we come back, I want to talk more actually about how the fear kept you stuck for so long.
Sure.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be back in just a few minutes. Stay tuned for Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and tonight's topic is homophobia in the workplace and schools. My guest tonight is Leslie Tuckman, a marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles. Leslie, you were talking before the break about how fear kept you stuck so long being a school counselor and assisting students dealing with these issues, but yet not being able to fully show up because of your own fears of the ramifications of that.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, you know, it was just at the time, certainly prior to maybe 10 years ago, one could hardly say that I could hardly speak the words lesbian, homosexual. Maybe 10 years ago it got, I'd say about 10 years ago it became easier because more and more people, thank goodness, were coming out. So I feel like I owe my coming out to the many people who had the courage to do it before me. But it certainly was rage-producing on some level within me that I was unable or felt unable to share myself and needed to keep myself so hidden. Eventually, after 34 years, I did leave the schools, and now I'm able to be in my career, and I'm very out, and it feels so much different to me. I just feel really like a changed person.
And from my understanding is that there are more and more people within the school system now that are out as teachers or school counselors and are able to, you know, present themselves more as, in a sense, positive role models, or you know, show that the sky's not going to fall in if you just be
right.
Who you
there's,
are.
There's been a lot of inroads made. Project 10 through the LA Unified School District was one of the first groups I knew about. There was a gay and lesbian educators group, I believe, as far back as the 80s. But what I think has made a huge difference is the organization, the acronym is GLSEN, G-L-S-E-N, which stands for Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Educators Network. And they're a national organization, and they have chapters in many, many states, and they do a great deal of actually publications on the internet, which is where I've gotten most of my information about them. And their goal is safe schools for not only students, but for educators. And they've existed for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
GLSEN.
What are your thoughts? I know that recently there was news reports about New York City opening a separate school
for
GLBT youth, a high school for them. What are your thoughts
about? Well, I know it's been very controversial. I think that some people, you know, are saying that why should they go to school separately? That just separates them off more. As with everything, there's pluses and minuses. And I think anything that heightens everybody's awareness to the fact that we are out there and we exist and we deserve to be full and whole people is really what is important.
Right. And I think also in terms of the philosophy behind having a school like that is that students can't learn if they're in school living in fear.
Well, it certainly makes it harder.
Yeah,
yes.
And so that the whole idea of having it is to create safety where there are a lot of schools that don't protect these students and a lot of people who believe that they shouldn't have special protections, as they say, and yet a lot of these students drop out, are suicidal, or had difficulty just showing up and attending class because of the threats and the violence and the lack of safety that they have. So until schools in general provide that consciousness so that there's less of the homophobia within the schools, at least these students can get an education free of fear.
Yes, and actually you mentioned the suicide on the part of teenagers. There's I've been kind of doing a search to see what is out there in terms of educating educating people in the workplace as well as schools, and there is an organization. It's a white ribbon campaign, and it's to raise awareness about gay teen suicide and to remember those who we've lost. And I do have a website for it. It's ribbon.tripod.com.
Say it again.
Whiteribbon.tripod.com.
Okay.
And it looks like it has a lot of really valuable things to know about.
Great. Now, one of the reasons you and I connected was because you were seeking some help with a particular situation and turned to the Lesbian and Gay Psychotherapists Association, of which until recently I've been co-president of. And can you talk a little bit about what you've been encountering and why that motivated you to start looking for some
help? Yes. Well, let me see. I have been doing a special kind of training for myself to learn more, not necessarily about gay and lesbians in psychotherapy, but in general, I wanted more training for myself. So I have been at a clinic where I have clients in supervision, and there have been several incidents that have really shocked me, and I guess I was more naive than I imagined, in terms of, straight interns and trainees not really, having had much, training at all about, gay and lesbian, transgender, bisexual issues. I think the most intense situation happened for me in a training where the clinical supervisor made some comments that I would consider very stereotyped, homophobic. I feel like I really had to step up to the plate and call her on it. And what's come out of it is that I've been doing a search to see if we can do some training at that clinic for the interns. So started as a very upsetting situation to me, I had to turn it into something that would be constructive. So I went on this search about a month ago, called everywhere, went on the internet, and I'm aware that there's, at least in Los Angeles, there's some training, but not enough in terms of just educating people in the field of mental health, not to mention, in other workplaces.
Let me stop you for a minute and ask you, how, I know that you were motivated to really confront the supervisor and stuff, but how scary was that for you?
It came out of me. It didn't even, I was out to the, when I went to the, when I first came to the clinic to offer my services in trade for being trained, at the end of the short interview, they said, was there anything else that I wanted to ask? And I said, no. I said, but there's one thing I wanted to tell. And I said that I had, I am a lesbian and that I had been in the schools as well as practice. However, in the schools I always had to be closeted and that I was no longer willing to be closeted and that I just wanted them to know that I am a lesbian and that I don't want that to be a secret. So even when these comments were, this particular comment was made, it was done knowing, you know, that I was in the room, and so I didn't feel any hesitation about confronting the director. I don't think, and that's sort of the miracle for me. I mean, I didn't feel, not only did I not feel shame, I just felt, to be honest with you, enraged.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped her and I said, you can't say that. You're teaching here. And she turned to me and she apologized profusely.
She got it. She understood.
She said, you know I'm just kidding. That's what really got me. She, you know I am just kidding. And I, in front of the other people, I said, there is no kidding about this.
Mm-hmm.
She made a personal apology to me. I said, it's not personal. It's much bigger than personal.
A lot of people they think because it's done in the form of a joke, that people can make light of it, but most stereotypes are perpetuated and prejudices are reinforced by making fun of people and groups, so no matter what it is. And we all have been, I don't care whether you're gay or lesbian or whether you're Jewish or Catholic or whatever, we've all know what it's like to be in a room and hear somebody make a joke at the expense of a group that we may belong to and people don't realize that we do, or people are very straightforward about it, whether you're, you know, whether it's, you know, African American, Latino, or whatever, we've all heard the slurs.
Yes, absolutely.
We all know that if it's something that, you know, we may not be open about, what it might be like for a gay or lesbian person to be in a room and people are making fag jokes or dyke jokes, mm-hmm. or whatever, and we're too afraid to open our mouths because we know that they're talking about us and how they might respond, and all of a sudden it may not be safe to be on our job anymore.
Yep.
And that's something everybody listening can relate to in some way. So we're going to take another short break here and come back with my guest Leslie Tuckman, and this is Tell the Truth Faster and Stuart Altshuler. Stay tuned.
Loud sound.
Yes, I know. We're back on the air, I think. This is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster. And I apologize for the technical problem that I think we had there. And anyway, we're here talking about homophobia and in the workplace. And my guest tonight has been Leslie Tuckman. And Leslie, you were talking about being confronted by a bigoted remark by a supervisor and the anger driving you to go up and say something to her and getting an apology from her. How did that feel doing that? I mean, because a lot of people would be very hesitant to confront their own supervisor.
Well, you know, there probably would have been many situations in my life in the past where that would have occurred. So I can't even answer what it was. it just came. It just is one of those moments where it was the sort of the choiceless choice. I just knew I had to do it, and I didn't even think first, which I guess is one way of saying that my own personal homophobia has hopefully transformed.
Yeah.
It took a long time since I was five.
And so what was the result of that?
Well, I stopped the group. I mean, I stopped the interchange that was happening in the group, and I turned to the supervisor and I said, "What are you doing? You can't do this. You know, you're in a teaching position." And as I think I said before, she said she was teasing, and then she eventually apologized. And after the supervision session, she came to me again apologizing, and I said, "You know, it's really not about me. It's a much bigger issue than that." And I said, "Let's turn this into something positive." I said, "You know, I would like to use this opportunity to plan a training or an in-service or a workshop with the staff to tell them perhaps about myself and, you know, a little bit about homophobia." And her response was, "That's great." She said, "We've never had anybody offer to do that before."
Mm-hmm.
Now, since then, I have surveyed the L.A. area, and there are quite a few people that do go into the workplaces, and I'm sure in the Phoenix area that exists also, for actually no fee even, mm-hmm. to help educate people. And so we at this particular mental health clinic are planning something, and I don't know whether I will do it or somebody else. It really doesn't matter. What matters is that it gets done.
Mm-hmm.
And so overall, I think it was a good thing that it even happened.
Well, most definitely. And, you know, like you said, you know, you took something that was uncomfortable and you went for solution. And I know that when we talked earlier, you had said, you know, "I'm not necessarily the expert at knowing what to do about this, but what I'm saying to you is you did know what to do about it. You spoke the truth about not allowing it to continue, and you said, you know, we need to set a tone here. We have interns that are being trained, and wouldn't it be great if they received some kind of foundation in dealing with GLBT issues,
mm-hmm.
So that in the future they would be more sensitive to the clients that may come their way,
mm-hmm.
and in doing so, deal with maybe some of their own issues, their own fears, their own prejudices, or misconception."
Mm-hmm. And I think it's lack of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's lack of exposure.
Yeah.
Well, regardless of what our prejudices are, I really believe they're lack of information.
Yeah. And unfortunately, most master's programs or PhD programs, the irony of this is that most programs do not necessarily contain a component on dealing with GLBT issues.
No.
What I've experienced is that they clump it together with minorities or
diversity
issues.
Yeah.
But that's giving somebody a little bit when they really need more understanding and more competence.
Yeah.
And confidence.
Yeah.
In dealing with these issues.
Well, I have an additional supervisor who is actually an analyst, a contemporary psychoanalyst, and I mentioned the situation to her, and she said, she was very open. She said, "You know, I've never had any training myself."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "You know, there are an awful lot of people out there who really would welcome having more information, because we all have gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender clients.
As well as friends, whether they know it or not. And colleagues.
And family.
You know? And to be able to open up the discussion so that in the future, even after the training, you know, by self-identifying what you've done also is presented yourself in certain ways as a professional consult, as a you know, someone that they can go to after the training too and say, you know, what about this issue? What do I do with this
point? I
hadn't
even thought of that. That's a great
You know, but to me that's part of the self-empowerment issue. This
mm-hmm.
is part of about speaking your truth and living your truth faster is when you're at peace with who you are and you let people know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
People are filled with questions. They just didn't know who they could ask.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
While you're just one woman who happens to be lesbian and don't necessarily represent every lesbian on the planet,
right,
any more than I represent every gay man on the planet, what they will learn is that there's as much diversity within the GLBT community,
yes,
you know, as any other group. You know, but at least mm-hmm. there's a resource that you presenting yourself as, you know, so that they can go and ask a question.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting, too. One of my clients at the clinic is a gay man, and you know, it's kind of an interesting issue as to when and whether one comes out. If I were in private practice, it would be probably a different kind of approach. But I think that you know, one has to decide: am I coming out for myself, or am I really coming out to benefit the other person?
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of a clinical issue that I'm dealing with.
Well, so. The self-disclosure issue, I mean, there are a lot of therapists and a lot of schools of thought is you never self-disclose
right.
as a therapist.
Right.
That,
no matter what it is.
No matter what it is. And I'm not of that.
I don't think I am either.
You know, to me, when it's relevant, if it's going to move the process along, I mean, we're not there necessarily to talk about my own issues, but if something in my own life may help inspire or give some insight into someone else's process,
mm-hmm.
to me, I think it's totally appropriate and totally okay to do, you know, but it is about being conscious enough
yes.
to know the clients and to know where that may or may not lead.
Definitely.
Yeah, but I'm certainly someone, I mean, I'm an open book, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm on the air talking about myself,
so am I.
You know, so it's like my clients tend to know who I am, and
yes.
and to me, that's important, that as a therapist, I'm humanized to them.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very important.
Yeah, and not deified.
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
I really agree.
So,
there's many thoughts, many theories.
Well, we also find, I think, you know, it's like I've had this issue in the past, you know, dealing with, you know, a lot of the addiction work I've done, where a lot of doctors, a lot of their medical training lack a lot of stuff on addictions. And
mm.
here they are writing out prescriptions
wow.
and stuff, and there are a lot of medical schools that don't really, or at least in the past haven't, I think it's happening more, are not really, you know, you'd think it would be common sense that they're putting the power of prescriptions in doctors' hands, that they would be training them into, you know, what would happen and how to deal with addiction issues. And it's the same thing. There are a lot of medical schools that also do not add a lot of lifestyle diversity, sexual orientation diversity,
right.
Training to them, and yet in this day and age where, you know, AIDS is such a factor and women's health care is such a factor, that they're not getting more specific GLBT training,
right.
even in medical school.
Well, I think we're really on the forefront of that changing. I think that it's time. It's way past time to change that. And the need is greater and greater. And I had never felt as moved until you know, recently, to become involved in participating in whatever way I can.
Mm-hmm. What else? I know that this was one example. This afternoon you were telling me about another situation in terms of, I think it was another staff member making a comment about because they knew someone was working with a gay client, expecting that client to come on to them or something like
yes,
that?
Yes, yes. Well, that was what I didn't describe it specifically, but that was the incident that I was talking about
mm-hmm.
earlier, where the person, you know, asked, well, did your client come on to you yet?
Which is a consciousness where people are sexualizing.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone's gay or lesbian, they're
exactly.
sexualizing it and assuming that there's a promiscuity and that every gay and lesbian client is going to sexualize their therapy any more,
right.
you know, more so than a heterosexual client might do transference or sexualize,
of course.
You know, their therapist. And
well, I think that is the stereotype. When someone says the word gay, lesbian, homosexual, transgender, bisexuality, they think of the I think they think of the sexual act rather than the person.
Exactly. Exactly. And Talk more about that.
Well, I think that again, it's lack of information, lack of proper information anyway, lack of knowledge, just misconceptions, as you talked about earlier, and I think that all of that is really ripe for learning about, for teaching about, and that those of us that have been fortunate enough to come behind those people that were brave enough to be out there first, now our obligation is to go back and help train people, you know, in the way that another path should be made.
Right. So we're going to take another short break here, Leslie, and we'll be back in a few minutes with Tell the Truth Faster, so stay tuned.
Okay.
Welcome back to the final segment tonight of Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. Tonight's topic has been homophobia in the workplace and in schools. My guest tonight has been Leslie Tuckman, a marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles. And we were talking about going to solution. We were talking about, Leslie, the power of having stood up and said what you said and actually getting support and doing some basic training for these students. What have you found in terms of who you're going to get to do this? Or I know that LAGPA has offered some assistance, the Lesbian Gay Psychotherapist Association.
Well, I had made many phone calls and kept track of them, and it's been an interesting search over the past few weeks. I did find an organization called the acronym is GLIDE, Gay and Lesbians Initiating Dialogue for Equality. That is a group of volunteer, it's like a volunteer speakers bureau, and they have a website, actually. I think if one puts into Google, GLIDE, it'll come up. And, there's one of the nice things about that organization, and they are local. I don't know if they work out of L.A., but they have done a lot of workshops in schools and churches and mental health clinics, and they have a lot of testimonials from different people who have really gotten a lot from their work. So that they've offered to come. There's PFLAG, the parents. Friends, lesbians and gays. They're probably the original support group I remember way back, in the early 70s. There's actually the Gay and Lesbian Services Center here in LA has a number of classes having to do with learning about violence that takes place with lesbians and gays, and there are certainly ways to learn more, but I see a real lack of training. I'm concerned about our state organization, the California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists. I know that last year they had one very short presentation about working with gays and lesbians, and yet that's a very large organization.
Mm-hmm. So, and I think the point here also is that if people are listening and they're realizing, you know what, our workplace doesn't do anything, and I've heard, you know, people making comments, and maybe it would help, or if you know, people are part of mental health clinics or schools or whatever, that if they do their homework like you've done, they will find someone locally that has the expertise to come in and do it. And if they have the courage that you showed, Leslie, to speak up and speak out, even if you're not a gay, lesbian, or bisexual, transgender person yourself, but you realize this is important, if you have the courage to speak out, sooner or later you will be able to implement something.
Yes, and actually I just, you know, the situation happened. I came home, I was very upset, and I thought, okay, who am I going to call? I wanted to call the police.
But anger can do.
I thought, well, somehow I didn't think that would work, so I called two or three people I knew, and they referred me to people, and within a couple of days, I had talked to like 30 people and was on the internet, and I now have, you know, folders and folders, and actually I'm going to go to the national conference that GLSEN, the Gay and Lesbian Educators Network, is having in Washington, D.C. to learn more. So there you have it.
That's great. Again, I really want to commend you. You were talking earlier during the break with me about feeling a bit self-righteous about, you know, all you've accomplished, and I really want to say you have a right to be proud of the steps you've taken and the reaction that you turned something, you created something positive out of a situation that could have, that was uncomfortable and could have been more uncomfortable if it wasn't addressed. And I think it's important that you realize that you can be proud of yourself, not only for taking the step that you took and not sitting back and being silent, but also the fact that you are going to create an educational thing for other people that may not have even realized they needed it.
Yeah, and I am really grateful to all the people who've gone before me, because I really would never have been able to do this if it weren't for other people's courage. I really feel the need to say that.
Great. And I want to thank you. I want to thank you for so spontaneously today agreeing to do the show and being as articulate as you've been.
Thank you.
And bringing the heart and emotion that you brought to the topic tonight. I want to thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you. I've been really grateful to be able to do that.
Thanks. So before we close tonight, timely as it may seem, I was actually reading the newspaper today and came across an article that actually has to do with Arizona and Phoenix. And the heading is, probe continues into phone message accusing Arizona government governor of gay agenda. And apparently, even during the last election, Arizona's Governor Janet Napolitano, somebody started making phone calls saying that the governor, who was running for re-election at the time, was pushing a pro-gay agenda, and this, whoever it was that sent out these mass phone messages didn't identify themselves, was using scare tactics, which is exactly what we've been talking about tonight, scare tactics, buying into people's prejudice, homophobia, and, you know, getting out there without having the integrity and the guts to say, this is me, and I'm telling you that this is what this governor does. Even though it was not true, and it doesn't matter, just because she is, that your governor in Arizona is somebody who has integrity and someone who understands the importance for human rights and the importance for respect and diversity within her own state, and speaks up on behalf of that, is a positive, not a negative. And for people to buy into the bigotry and the prejudice by doing this kind of campaigning against her is a clear demonstration of the ignorance and the level of fear that so many people will tap into. And I'm hoping that what's happening in Arizona because of this and because of the investigation into this is that Governor Napolitano is actually going to be a catalyst into maybe healing some of the homophobia and some of the misconceptions that are out there, and that the person who made these phone calls may actually have had it backfire on them, because I think it's causing people to question why this was even an issue and why this was something that could have come into play in a political campaign. And, you know, in a sense, they may have done a service by showing that kind of ugliness and that kind of bigotry. And according to this article, Governor Janet Napolitano has really spoken out to the inappropriateness of it and to the, you know, support of the GLBT community. So I want to acknowledge her and, in a sense, maybe even acknowledge the person that was too much of a coward to be open about who they were, and in a sense created this backlash and a greater consciousness in the state of Arizona for GLBT issues in a positive way. So I want to thank all of you for listening. I want to thank my guest again, Leslie Tuckman, for being a guest. I encourage all of you to tune in and tell your friends about the show next week. And if you are interested in advertising on the show and buying some airtime, please get in touch with me. The website is tellthetruthfaster.com. You can email me or Leslie via that, and I'd love to hear your comments. So thank you for listening. This is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster saying good night. That I heard of love.